This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. On April 14, 1865, John Wilkes Booth shot President Abraham Lincoln. Nearly 100 years later, Lee Harvey Oswald shot President John F. Kennedy. But in the play Assassins, they share a stage along with seven other killers, or would-be killers. What happens when nine assassins walk into a bar? You get a Stephen Sondheim musical. And you can see a production of Assassins performed by the Playmakers Repertory Company now through April 20th at the Paul Green Theater in Chapel Hill. Mike Donahue directed and is directing Assassins along with Playmakers, and he's with us now. Welcome, Mike. Good to have you.
Hi, thanks. Great to be here.
Julie Fischel is also here. She plays Sarah Jane Moore, who tried to kill President Gerald Ford. She's also a professor of acting and directing at UNC Chapel Hill. Julie, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Good to have you here. So, Mike, who are these assassins in our production? You don't have to name them, but just give us the range of work that they did or tried to do.
Sure, yeah. So you have anyone from John Wilkes Booth, who most people know, to someone named Giuseppe Zangara, who tried to assassinate FDR, maybe because of a stomach ache. He was trying to find a way to cure his stomach ache. To someone like John Hinckley, who is trying to get the attention and win the affection of Jodie Foster. So there's a huge range of people, both from periods and time, and also people who have different motivations for trying to assassinate the president.
It's an interesting play in the way you have to manipulate time, because we get their stories, but then they are really all on the stage roughly at the same time, right?
They are, even though they come from sort of a span of over 100 years. They all exist in the same moment in time in this piece, and when the piece begins, none of them have actually yet assassinated their president or tried to. So over the course of the piece, you sort of live simultaneously with all of them as they attempt to do it.
And so tell us about this, some of the themes that come together. Why would we want to put nine assassins in a room?
That is a great question, and spend 90 minutes watching them. yeah. One of the things that Sondheim and the book writer John Wideman have done so brilliantly is they've taken this group of people who are largely unknown, or if known at all, often considered to be outcasts, misfits, people that aren't a part of our daily society. And they found not only a common thread that runs through the experiences of these assassins, but they found a common thread that also resonates with the way that many of us define what it is to be an American. It's a group of people in this piece, these assassins, who all feel themselves in some way to be disenfranchised. They're all a group of people who were promised the right to be happy, the right to pursue their happiness, the idea that they can be whoever they want to be and achieve their dreams. And if they don't get those things, if they feel entitled but don't have them, if they feel invisible, that they then have a right to do something about it.
And that's what makes this, in a sense, a quintessentially American play, that expectation.
Yes, and that the sort of the exploration of the repercussions of how we articulate what it is to be an American.
And there's also, of course, the theme of violence and the glorification of violence and how some of these assassins or would-be assassins viewed their predecessors, right?
There is, yeah. I mean, the tone in the show is sort of wonderfully surprising and ever-changing. And the way that violence is positioned for these people is as a way of feeling powerful and having an opportunity to be heard and to be seen, whether it's people recognizing you or it's being famous or it's winning the love of someone. It's a tool for having power and status in the piece.
Power and violence, and it's a musical.
It is, and it's a funny musical.
Well, so tell us about that. I mean, the idea of these assassinations and guns going off, many, many gunshots in this play, by
indeed,
the way.
Almost 50 shots per night.
Okay. That's a lot. And it's a music. Is it a challenge creating this? I mean, there's some fairly serious stuff here. People are getting hurt. People are dying. And we're singing along as follow the bouncing ball, as it were.
Exactly. I mean, it's one of the brilliant things about Sondheim is the ability to sort of play that high wire tonal act that there are moments when we laugh at a gun going off. And indeed, you know, you're able to shoot a gun with different charges. And we have to have a conversation about how loud a gunshot is based on whether we're meant to laugh at the gun going off or we're supposed to be scared of the gun going off. But they use comedy in the piece, Sondheim and Wideman use comedy in the piece as a way to sort of break the ice and allow us to access some of these people that we might otherwise put a wall up against.
And Julie, one of the other delicate dances in this play is the way women are treated. There are two women would-be assassins in American history, Squeaky Fromm, we remember Lynette Squeaky Fromm, and your character, Sarah Jane Moore. Tell us about your character.
Sarah Jane Moore, what an enigma. I knew very little about her going into the project. She is a chameleon. I mean, she's still living. In fact, she's out of prison at this point. She had five husbands. She had children that she just decided to send to her parents one day and never see again. She was a real chameleon. She dropped her identities, picked new ones up, was a, you know, an informant for the FBI, for Friends of the SLA, and, you know, lived this amazingly crazy life in San Francisco.
We remember when the story came out because it was right on the – I think they were a week apart, these assassination attempts on Gerald
they
Ford.
They were.
And in many ways, it was hard even at the time to take them seriously. I mean, remember Gerald Ford is the guy who's famously hitting people in the head with golf balls. He's tripping and falling. He's this hapless kind of guy. And then these two women, one named Squeaky of all things, tries to kill him and they miss. I mean, it's so hard to take them seriously, and yet – it is serious. And then there's this kind of gendered consideration. Are we not taking them serious because they're women? I mean, how do you approach a role like that?
Wow. Well, it's been a very interesting year for me at Playmakers. I started the year off playing Prospero in The Tempest. So I was playing him as a man, in fact. So it's been very interesting, this whole idea of gender for me this season, actually, at Playmakers. I was thinking about this question actually last night as the show was running in terms of how the women are portrayed. And, I think that it was very smart that they have me probably shooting as the most bullets of any character, Sarah Jane Moore, in the piece. And, also she's one of the warmest, funniest, most accessible characters. I was having a discussion with someone about this. You know, women are not encouraged to sort of run around and, you know, take a strong stance and walk in with a big gun and clear a room in our culture. And maybe in many, many, many cultures, but just so I think the way in which we go about that, the way in which we go about claiming power in a society that's very patriarchal is that we have to be kind of cagey about it. You know,
yeah.
We have to find a way in to play with, you know, the boys,
yeah,
so to speak. And, you know, certainly I think, Sarah Jane Moore, I keep making jokes about it, but she did have five husbands. I mean, she must have been doing something right. So, I mean, in her estimation.
Yeah. Well, and this question of identity is kind of very important, too. And you're right. As I think about it, I never once encouraged my daughter to take a shot at a president. No, why not?
Well, yes, exactly. Yeah, I don't think her family did either. I think that, you know, she's a wonderful combination of crazy attributes, like, yeah, most people. You know, she is, one might say she's a psychopath. I mean, one might say, you know, regardless of gender, she, you know, there's a lot of psychological damage and issues for her.
Well, and that's one of the interesting things in this play, too, isn't it, Mike? And one of the things you have to deal with as a director, there are the personal stories, the idiosyncrasies of each of these characters, many of which, you know, could be their own, have psychological profiles which could create their own drama. And yet it's in a social and political context. And we talked about it already, the expectation that in America we have our day in the sun, our 15 minutes of fame, and things will be better for us than they were for their parents. So you've got both of those things going on, this very personal thing, and then this deeper kind of political questions. How do you sort of work with that as a director?
I think the first thing you need are sort of a brilliant cast of actors who are really wonderful at being able to crack the spine of these characters and to find what it is that makes them sort of universally human, where their vulnerabilities and their insecurities are, and allow an audience to actually connect with who these people are. And then the fun for me becomes continually changing the framing of how we relate to those people on stage and what our distance or our proximity to them is in any given moment.
One of the psychological problems that might be common to all of them, we could easily call narcissism, right? This kind of this sense that what I'm feeling is what everybody's feeling, and yet when you project that onto the American scene, that's been written into the Constitution. We all get to have our own personal happiness, and I think that's what you're talking about. How we're actually identifying at certain points in the play with these assassins.
I think we're asked to, certainly. Yeah. I think the piece is quite successful in the writing of it. I mean, even there's an ensemble in the show that is used sparingly, and they're sort of representative of the other America, the Americans who don't try to kill presidents. And they are the first time we see them if not more so, power hungry, fame hungry than the assassins themselves. They have a whole song in which they battle for airtime to talk about how they were there on the day that FDR was almost shot. So even they themselves are sort of driven by the same forces.
And talk about the admiration that some characters have for the others as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a sort of a wonderful interplay. You know, many of the assassins that came later on knew a lot about the earlier assassins. Like, Hinckley had every book written on Oswald. And because all of these assassins are sort of compressed into the same moment in time in the piece, they're suddenly able to interact with people that in their lives were sort of mythic, heroic, historical figures, but now they're living and breathing in the same room as them. So Hinckley has an opportunity to actually meet Oswald and to even attempt to sort of enlist Oswald and convince him to go ahead and shoot JFK, and then also has an opportunity to ask for an autograph.
Julie, your character is one that provides some comic relief in some ways. So I want to get back to this question of gender, but also kind of what, you know, being faithful to the play. Mm-hmm. You know, is there a tension then between this wonderful comic relief? This play is funny, it is deep, it's got music, it's about things, and it plays with time in ways that are not necessarily representational. Mm-hmm. You're offering comic relief, and yet you're a woman. So there's the danger, and I would think for an actress this has got to be the challenge for you. There's a danger that we're going to, you know, when it comes to the women's, now we can chuckle and have a laugh, and now back to our story with the men.
Mm, right.
How do you balance that?
Yeah, Mike and I worked on this very early on that, you know, and he and actually the set designer were having a lot of conversations about how women were portrayed in this, you know, sort of the role that women were given. You know, we're very interested in chasing the idea that there's a consciousness in the sense of adopting a kind of ingratiating, behavior in order to, you know, being very savvy about what I'm doing as I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that comes out in several of moments in the piece where it's clear that I am playing other people. I'm trying to get things from them by, you know, adopting a certain kind of behavior. And I think I'm really happy with that, you know, I'm not just a buffoon, which I think is, you know, maybe could be the easy way out with her. I think that, you know, for me, it's a wonderful exercise. You know, comedy is very difficult. I mean, in order to play comedy well, you have to play it as seriously as anything else. The only difference are circumstances. So, you know, it's very interesting for me. The whole place really focuses on what is the definition of happiness? What is the definition of a right to be happy? Are we going to, as a society, sort of define what's fair game for your goal of happiness and what's not? And I think it's wonderful to work on this piece. It's a great cast, and we are so connected on and off stage. We are a group. And I feel that, you know, we are asking a huge question in the piece, you know, that we're not labeling these people as just anomalies.
Right.
I mean, they did this extraordinary thing, but what they're struggling with, and what the piece wants us to struggle with, is who gets to define what someone's idea of happiness is,
and what someone's idea of their own who they are. Right? I mean, we pride ourselves in this society about our sort of individuality, which we've taken to, I think, pathological heights. But individuality is the big thing. So I am my own person, and yet, ironically, we're lost in this kind of mass culture where we're grasping onto these projected identities, these huger than life persona, whether they're movie stars or assassins. And we take our identities from them. And certainly that's something that comes out in the play, drawing your identity from people who've been glorified, whether what they've done is good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
Identity plays a big part in this play.
It does. I think one of the things that's really interesting is that not only are many of these people driven by the need to be seen, to be visible, and to make a difference, but they're also all at the same time driven by an incredible hunger to connect and to feel a part of something. I think that's sort of the flip side of being so fractured by this individualism and the desire to have those 15 minutes, that you do also become starved for community. And that's the other big part of what this piece is actually about.
And it's a heck of a production. I mean, not only is there the music, but I mean, there's like a big sign out front. So what, in a sense, letting the audience know what they're getting into.
All of the dangers of walking into our theater.
That's right. Tell us about it.
There's a lot of splash zone in this piece. Well, we're, you know, so there are over 20 guns in the show, and the guns fire almost 50 times, half of which are attributed to Julie. And we're in a very deep thrust to Playmakers. So it's, you know, there are moments when characters do go out of their way to actually directly point a gun at the audience. Someone points a gun at a six-year-old boy. I mean, it's not easy what's happening with the guns in that space, and they are running all around with them. And so there is a feeling of danger to it. And also in the way the show is structured, it has a feeling of anarchy to it and how it moves forward from one moment to the next. There is no traditional linear narrative. There's no narrator. There's no sort of clear protagonist. Everyone is vying for control of the evening.
Speaking of guns, there's kind of a funny story and aside. I mean, Sarah Jane Moore, the attempted to kill Gerald Ford, used a gun, missed. But that's, tell us the story. I mean, the FBI had actually disarmed her.
Yeah, they did. I mean, her whole life is very terse. It's hard to get at any of the truth of it. Right. But at one point she was informing for the FBI. She was and then she was also working for Randolph Hearst, because the SLA held Patty Hearst, and she also knew some people from the SLA. And then she was also involved in this underground political movement in San Francisco. So the FBI was keeping an eye on her. Certainly they confiscated a gun. I believe it was the police chief of San Francisco had put a warning out about her that she might be capable of something to this magnitude. And so she didn't have a gun. They took the gun. She got up the morning. She decided to shoot the president. He was going to be at a hotel in San Francisco. She went. She bought the gun. She'd never used this particular gun. It had a different sight than she was used to. It was a different gun. So she basically showed up. She tried to kill him. And really the reason she missed, because she was in the Army Corps. She knew how to shoot. She was actually a good shot. She missed him because it was a new gun and she wasn't familiar with it.
Didn't have enough time on the
range.
Because you could buy a gun that morning and shoot it that afternoon.
That's right.
See, if we would allow more time, then people could actually get better at shooting. That's the reason we should put a couple of – about a month so that people can actually get good with a gun, then buy it. I'm telling you, the NRA should get behind that, not fight it. And it does talk about the availability of guns and how crazy it is. A cop can disarm you because we think we're going to kill the president. You just buy a gun the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we also buy them from this character that's the proprietor that is sort of, you know, manages this shooting gallery. It's like the context of the piece is this fair. And so we're buying guns in this spirit of going to an entertainment location.
Really fast. I've only got about 30 seconds left, but the idea that you actually calibrate the sound, the level of the guns to give you – who figured that out? I mean, where did that come from?
It was a group effort, the whole design team and the production staff. You do a big test with each gun and all the different degrees of charges in the bullets, because each gun handles a differently charged bullet in a particular sort of way. So a half charge sounds different in one gun from another. So you do a big sound test with all of them.
It sounds great. Mike Donahue is the director of Assassins at Playmakers Rep. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Frank.
Julie Fischel plays Sarah Jane Moore in this production, also a professor of acting and directing at UNC Chapel Hill. Julie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can see Stephen Sondheim's Assassins through April 20th at the Paul Green Theater in Chapel Hill. Just ahead, the music of Dark Water Rising. Stay tuned.